Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai, Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nivasesa Sanivadi Paskachade Satarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Scha Panchakalpa Chubishaki Pasindabhya Bachapaditanam Pavanevyo Vaishmi Banamo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. October 3rd, 2013, Hilo, Hawaii, over Skype. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8. Text 39. Nayam sobhisthite tatra.
Nayam sobhisthite tatra.
Yate dhanim gadadhara.
Yate dhanim gadadhara.
Twat padair ankita bhati. Swalakshana Vilakshitai. Not. Hiyam. This land of our kingdom.
This land of our kingdom.
Shobhisthite.
Shobhisthite.
Will appear beautiful.
Will appear beautiful.
Tatra.
Tatra.
Then.
Then.
Yata. As it is, idanim, now, gadadhara, O Krishna, twat, your, padai, by the feet, ankita, marked, bhati, is dazzling, swalakshana, your own marks, vilakshitai, by the impressions, translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O Gadadhara Krishna, our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet, and therefore it appears beautiful. But when you leave, it will no longer be so. Purport. There are certain particular marks on the feet of the Lord which distinguish the Lord from others. The marks of a flag, thunderbolt, and instruments to drive an elephant, umbrella, lotus, disc, etc. are on the bottom of the Lord's feet. These marks are impressed upon the soft dust of the land where the Lord traverses. The land of Hastinapur was thus marked while Lord Sri Krishna was there with the Pandavas, and the kingdom of the Pandavas was thus flourished by such auspicious signs. Kunti Devi pointed out these distinguished features and was afraid of ill luck in the absence of the Lord. Nayam shobhisthite tatra yate danim gadadara. Twat pader ankita bhati Swalakshana Vilashitai. O Gadadhar Krishna, our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet, and therefore it appears beautiful. But when you leave, it will no longer be so. So the kingdom of the Pandavas was incredibly beautiful. They had taken Indraprastha, which had been a desert, and with the help of the demigods and the demons, even the demon-like Maya, they had made it practically as opulent as Indra's abode. Maya had made this palace where you couldn't tell what was water and what was land. It was a magical palace, an amazing fun house, so to speak. And there were fruit trees and flowers, and there's all these descriptions of Hastinapur and Indraprastha, how it was just so incredibly beautiful with architecture, with nature, with parks, and that there wasn't crime. I mean, if we think about the most beautiful areas of the world today, you know, my father always said that he wanted to go to Tahiti. He never went there. Hope he's not there now in this life. But anyway, you know, these beautiful places, people take photographs of them, you know, mountains, and tropical islands, and oceans, and rivers, and trees, and all these incredible geographical formations. So the earth at the time of Krishna's appearance was far more beautiful than it is now. If you take, like here in Hawaii, everybody calls it a paradise on earth, and Prabhupada said it was a remnant of a former age and a little indicative of a heavenly planet. So if the whole earth was like that, and more so even, much more so even than Hawaii, people could live in the forest then. I mean, right now there's not very many places on the earth where you could live in the forest. But in Krishna's time it was like that. The sages were living in the forest and they could just pick fruit from the trees. They didn't even have to engage in agriculture. The cows were supplying so much milk, it was pouring on the ground. And yet, Kunti saying, without the marks of your lotus feet, nothing would be beautiful. Sunyayitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename, that the whole world would be vacant. Everything would be empty. Of course, it's interesting, she's talking about the marks of Krishna's feet. And Prabhupada talks about the auspicious markings, the unusual markings. I mean, all of us have some lines on our feet, but I don't think any of us have like flags and thunderbolts and things like that. So these unusual markings on the soles of Krishna's feet. But of course, Prabhupada says that when Krishna was in Hastinapur or Dwarka, he wore shoes, right? He wasn't just walking barefoot. And still, even that is very beautiful. So whether Krishna's lotus feet or Krishna's shoes, that's still beautiful. Actually, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was saying to Krishna when he wanted to do the Rajasuya Yajna, he said, anyone who meditates on your lotus feet or even on your shoes will have all of his desires fulfilled. Of course, they weren't ordinary shoes. They weren't like some kind of plastic flip-flops or something like that. But Krishna's shoes were decorated with jewels and so forth. So the principle here is that nothing material is beautiful without Krishna, and everything becomes beautiful with Krishna. So in my own life, I was had a very nice life from a material perspective before coming to Krishna consciousness. We had a beautiful home right across from Central Park in New York City. We had enough wealth to get basically whatever we wanted or needed at a very high level of quality. And we traveled and I went to very good schools and I had loving family and so forth. And I remember when I was 13 years old, I was babysitting. The children were asleep. And I thought, what's the purpose of life? I was meditating on it for a while, and I came to the same conclusion that Prabhupada gave when he was asked this question in South America, where he said, the purpose of life is ananda, the purpose of life is pleasure. So I came to that conclusion, the purpose of life is to be happy. And then I thought, well, am I happy? I mean, first of all, just asking that question indicates that you're not happy. If you have to ask, am I happy? If you're happy, you don't have to ask that question. It's self-evident. But I thought, anyway, am I happy? So I made a list of the external things in my life. Now I have a loving, caring family. I have lots of friends. I have a nice house. I get good grades in school. You know, things like that. And I looked at the list and I said, oh, I must be happy. But later, when I came by the grace of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, when I came by the grace of my Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, to find out about Krishna, then actually my life became beautiful. Then my life became happy. And I'm sure we've also had that experience. Whatever we understood philosophically, when you add Krishna, it becomes perfect. You know, you can eat the most wholesome, perfect organic food, but when you add Krishna, then it becomes perfect. Right? Without Krishna, everything is dull. I mean, those who are really in love with Krishna, they see the world as vacant. Srila Prabhupada says that this is the transcendental reality of which material illusion is a perverted reflection. To see the world as vacant without Krishna, he says the world isn't vacant, it's full of so many things. But if you see that without Krishna, there's nothing here, there's nothing of value, it's all empty. I mean, on a material level, a person may think that way when they lose someone they love. You know, it happens like that. Person's husband or wife dies or child dies, and then everything becomes vacant. The person becomes depressed. They don't want to get out of bed. They don't find any joy anymore in anything in life. You know, the sort of the definition of clinical depression. Everything becomes void. Everything becomes empty because that person that they love is gone. And when that person is there, everything is filled with light. I think there was a song like that by the Beatles, like, they were birds in the trees, but I never heard them singing until there was you. You know, I don't remember the song, but something like that. You know, once there was you, then I noticed everything, and everything became beautiful, everything became wonderful. And without you, everything is empty. Of course, on the material level, with you or without you, it's still not really happiness. But when it's Krishna, then everything is actually happiness. And we can say very clearly that all of our so-called suffering in this world is simply due to not seeing Krishna. That's all. You know, transcendentally, to be separated from Krishna, as Kunti is anticipating here, and Prabhupada said earlier, it's like being a fish being out of water. That kind of separation, that's another form of ecstasy. As Radharani says, when I'm with Krishna, I see one Krishna. When I don't see Krishna, I see Krishna, millions and millions of Krishna. So on the transcendental level, both union and separation are ecstasy. Because even in separation, one sees there's Krishna everywhere. One's absorbed in Krishna. One is not really separate. There's no meaning to separation. In fact, Prabhupada, speaking about this verse, says that Krishna never really leaves the Pandavas at all, like he never really leaves Vrindavan. He's always with the devotees. But on a material level, an illusion in Maya meaning that which is not, as soon as we have the illusion that we're separated from Krishna, which is quite different from the ecstasy of being separated from Krishna, but as soon as we have that illusion, there's no more pleasure in anything. There's no more beauty in anything. Everything becomes dull and dry, and we may try to extract some beauty from something. We may try to extract some happiness from something, but it's not really there. Prahlad Maharaj says it's like chewing the chewed. You know, you're really trying because it looks like it has some happiness, but it's lost its essence. Krishna is called Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He's the form of all rasa, the form of all tastes. And Prabhupada says that everything we're doing is to try to enjoy some taste, some ananda, some pleasure, in different varieties. You know, we may think of pleasure just as joy. That's one of the rasas. It's
Hasya Rasa, comedy rasa, which is also joyful rasa. But there's also Karuna rasa. There's also grieving and compassion. You know, I give the example many times that people like to watch sad movies or read sad books. You know, somebody will say, hey, watch this video, it will make you cry. And people want to watch it. Oh, let me watch something that will make me cry. Because there's happiness also in Karuna Ras. There's happiness in Vira Ras, in chivalrous fighting. Prabhupada said, just like Krishna has a fighting nature, we also have a fighting nature. Sometimes people think that because they like to fight, they must be a Kshatriya. But everybody likes to fight. The Brahmins fight for philosophy and truth. The Kshatriyas fight for honor and prestige and righteousness. The Vaishyas fight for the bigger share of the market and wealth. And the Shudras fight over who is the best, you know, long-distance runner, or who's the best musician, or who's the best artist, like that. Everybody's fighting. There's competition and fighting everywhere. So that's Vira Ras. And there's the rasa of fear, and even the rasa of disgust. You know, ooh, look at this. Oh, let me see. What's the disgusting thing you're looking at? It's the violence, the rasa of disgust. So, and then, of course, the primary rasas of serving and friendship and parental and conjugal. So we're looking for those tastes. But when we don't have Akila Rasa Mrita Murti, when we don't have the essence, it's kind of like modern food. It's food without the essence. They've taken out the essence of the food. You know, you take the wheat and you take out the germ of the wheat, the essence of the wheat, and there's no flavor. You know, even they have whole wheat is sitting around so long that the wheat germ oil is turning rancid. But when you have fresh ground wheat, whole wheat, there's so much flavor. Or tree-ripened fruit, kalitamparam. Bhagavatam is compared to a tree-ripened fruit. So if you allow the fruit to ripen on the tree in the sunshine and the moonshine, and you feed it all organically, so it becomes full of rasa. That's the fragrance of the earth, which is Krishna, and the light of the sun, which is Krishna, the light of the moon, which gives juice to all the vegetables and fruit, the taste of the water going into the plant. So all these things that are Krishna, as they fill the fruit with rasa, with taste. But in the modern age, they pick the fruit prematurely. First of all, they produce fruits, they produce a variety of fruit, not for flavor and nutrition, but for resistance against bugs and diseases and for shipping easily and things like that. So they breed them for the wrong things. And then they don't allow the fruit to get its essence. So you get this fruit picked prematurely and shipped a long distance and ripened with some artificial way. And, you know, there's something there, but there's no real rasa. There's no real taste, and it doesn't fill you with vitality. Rather, the food itself is causing disease. And so you buy this food in the store, and the essence of it is gone. So all of our material enjoyment is like that. Material enjoyment simply means that the essence has been removed. It looks like it. Maya, that which is not. It looks like the same thing, but it's not. It looks like real food, but it's not real food. It's just some bunch of chemicals. It's some laboratory-produced food. It's not the real thing. You know, it looks like we're having real relationships, but Krishna says in the 5th chapter and in the 13th chapter that the soul's not doing anything. The soul's just witnessing. We're not really having those relationships at all. You know, it's kind of like two people playing a computer game with each other, and their computer-created characters are having a relationship. But they're sitting in two different parts of the world, and they're not even relating as the real person. You know, their characters are of a different personality than them. Their actual relationship is not happening. They're just simply witnessing. So we think like that. We think I'm having a relationship with this person. No, it's just a drama. You know, I've been in a lot of dramas, and in the drama, you dress up as a character and you take on the personality of that character, and your character is relating with others' characters, but you're not relating with the other person at all. Because your identity isn't. It's not your real identity. You're taking on a false identity, and therefore there's this barrier between you and the other person. You're not relating on the authentic platform. Even with our sense objects, you know, the hand and the tongue and the eye and the ear, the nose with which I'm interacting with the sense, they're not mine. That's not me, it's just a machine. I'm manipulating a machine whereby my attachment, I feel some sensation. But I'm not feeling the sensation directly. I'm simply witnessing. Therefore, there's no real rasa. There's the appearance of rasa, but there's not actually rasa. Everything becomes vacant. There's no real beauty. You know, we may see that there's beauty in the world separate from Krishna, but, I mean, if you see things separate from Krishna, how is there beauty? Darwin looked at the world without God, and he saw only ugliness. He saw that the world is about the survival of the fittest, and dog eat dog, and competition. That we live at the cost of others. That's how he saw the world. And Prabhupada talks about that in the description of autumn in the Krishna book. He says, for those who are not devotees, they see the world as very aggressive. The world becomes a fearful place and an ugly place. I remember when I was in college, in my class on literature, the professor wanted us to write a poem about truth. So at that time, I was already starting my interest in Krishna consciousness, so I wrote a poem about Krishna. And the professor didn't like it. He said, this isn't about truth. He said, it's too beautiful. And I said, truth is beautiful. He said, no, it's not, it's ugly. You know, just to see the naked, ugly truth. So as soon as one thinks one's separate from Krishna, as soon as one sees the world separate from Krishna, it appears like a very ugly, nasty, horrible place. And in fact, that's one of the things that Srila Prabhupada emphasized, and Bhagavatam also emphasizes, the forest of material enjoyment, that you cannot make the world beautiful without Krishna. You cannot have beautiful relationships without Krishna. You cannot have healthy eating without Krishna. Right? Yagya shishtasina santo murchante sarvakil vichad vunchate tejigam papam ye pachanchet makaranat. You can't. It will be papa. It will be sinful. Your very eating will be sinful. You know, be an organic farmer and only eat vegetarian or vegan even. You know, eat only raw, whatever. It's still, unless it's connected with Krishna, it's ugly. It's ugly. Even you want to merge, you know, into the Brahman. If you want to do for your own liberation, it's ugly. You want to be a good person in the world and give in charity and take care of people. But without Krishna, it's all ego. I'm a great person. I'm a this. I'm a that. You want to know so many things. Without Krishna, it's ego. It's manipulative. And how much can one know? Whatever we think of in life, as soon as one has this illusion of being disconnected from Krishna, it's horrible. It's dissatisfying. It's disappointing. It's ugly. It's violent. It's aggressive. You know, there's a somewhat of this mayic appearance that is the real thing, but it's not the real thing. You know, they had advertisement for some soda. It's the real thing. What real thing? It's a bunch of chemicals that are going to make you sick. How is it real? So Prabhupada emphasized in talking about this verse, you just have to add Krishna. You just have to add Krishna. If you want meaning, if you want beauty, if you want peace, if you want truth, you just have to add Krishna. Now, many of us who joined the Krishna consciousness movement later in life than birth or early childhood, we often didn't get this point. People who convert to a religion, so to speak, they often jettison everything from their past to form their new identity. So many of us who joined Krishna consciousness once we were grown, once we were teenagers or adults, we didn't just add Krishna. We took our assets and we threw them away. We tried to start from nothing to learn a whole new culture and a whole new vocabulary and a whole new mindset and a whole new identity. And for most of us later, sometimes much later, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, we started to look back in the rubbish bin and see that some of the things we had thrown away were valuable once we added Krishna. And of course, Srila Prabhupada emphasized this so much. I see that those who are born and raised in Krishna consciousness don't make that kind of mistake. They think about adding Krishna from the beginning, which sometimes gives the impression to the new fanatic, shall we say, converts, that those born in the movement are not so serious. But this principle of yukta vairagya, Rupa Goswami says those who do not engage in yukta vairagya are imperfect in their renunciation. So just add Krishna. Sometimes we're afraid, you know, if I use my talents in Krishna's service, then I'll be full of ego. But that's what your talents are for. They're for using in Krishna's service. They're not really yours. Just add Krishna. Whatever you love, I mean, that's one of the 64 angas of bhakti, offering Krishna a favorite article. Whatever you love to do, just add Krishna. Whatever is beautiful, is good, is healthy, add Krishna. Then it becomes actually beautiful. Then you're connecting it with the essence. Then you have the real rasa. And then even things which one wouldn't think of as being pleasurable, like, you know, cleaning the toilet, can become full of rasa. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami had this skin disease where he was oozing, and Mahaprabhu came and embraced him. Sanatana Goswami was very upset, and Mahaprabhu says, just like the mother when she's cleaning the stool and urine from the bottom of her child, she thinks it's like sandalwood pulp. Why? Because there's love. So what to speak of if there's Krishna? Then even, you know, cleaning your baby's behind for Krishna, changing their diapers, their nappies, that's full of rasa. People sometimes think, well, in order to be full of Krishna, you know, I have to leave my family and leave my occupation and go sit at the banks of Radhakund. So that may be there if that's Krishna's desire. Krishna told the Goswamis, leave everything. But he didn't tell everybody that. You know, of course, Ramananda Roy gave up his job, but he didn't give up his family. And Maharaj Pratiparudra, when he was thinking to give up the kingdom, Lord Chaitanya was very upset. And he said, who's going to take care of the people if Maharaj Pratiparudra becomes a mendicant? That's his service. He says, you know, whether you're renunciates or you're householders, it doesn't matter. Just add Krishna. Adding Krishna is not hard because Krishna is already there. Adding Krishna is just a sense of seeing what's already there and offering every moment of what one's doing. Prabhupada said, it doesn't matter what it is. Whatever one's doing at every moment, whether you're brushing your teeth or changing your baby's diaper or you're doing your work at the bank or you're working as a professor or you're driving the mail truck, you're sweeping the floor, add Krishna. This is Krishna's floor. It's Krishna's my ability. Krishna's my intelligence. Then the question may arise, can you add Krishna to anything? Well, yes. Prabhupada said in his lecture earlier on in the prayers of Queen Kunti that even the drunkard, when he's drinking his wine, he can think, Krishna's the taste in my wine. In Dwarka, there were prostitutes who were pure devotees of the Lord. So one can add Krishna to anything. Of course, at a certain point, one has to subtract sin.
add Krishna, subtract sin. Because without subtracting sin, adding Krishna is very difficult. And if one intentionally sins on the strength of chanting, then that will also be very difficult to add Krishna. So just because the only thing we have to do is to add Krishna, and just because it's possible to add Krishna even to sinful things, that is possible. And if one is doing that without offense, one will make advancement. At a certain point of adding Krishna, one should give up sin. Because by adding Krishna, adding Krishna, adding Krishna, one should start to become attached to Krishna. And when one becomes attached to Krishna, one should want to live in a way that pleases him. And he's not pleased by eating meat, fish, eggs. It doesn't please him. Krishna wants patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakti prajati tataham bhakti paritam ashrami prayadatma. Krishna doesn't want, you know, blood offerings. He can eat the universe, he does eat the universe, but he's not interested in offerings of meat, fish, and eggs. We never hear in Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual world, the descriptions of food or the descriptions in Mahaprabhu's pastimes. We never hear of meat, fish, and eggs. We just hear of fruits and vegetables and grains and dairy products. So that's not what Krishna wants. And Krishna wants his devotees to lead honest lives. He wants us to earn our money honestly, according to our varna and according to our ashram. When Krishna released the kings that Jarasandha had imprisoned, he told them, earn your money honestly. He also told this to Gopinath, Lord Chaitanya told this to Gopinath Patanayaka, after the prince, Maharaj Pratapruta's son, was going to kill Gopinath Patanayaka for stealing money from the government. And Mahaprabhu says, you have to earn your money honestly. So that's why no gambling. Gambling is a dishonest way to earn money. There's no exchange of goods and services. I mean, it's the top form of cheating. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, of all forms of cheating, gambling is the top, because the person you're cheating is willingly engaging in it. You know, if I go to your house and steal something, by definition, if I'm stealing it, you're not a willing participant. That's the definition of stealing. I'm taking something from you without your consent, generally without your knowledge. But with gambling, I'm stealing your money with your consent. So the supreme form of cheating. I'm not giving you anything in exchange. So one should give up sinful ways of earning a livelihood. One should earn one's livelihood honestly. And no intoxication. We're already intoxicated. Aham mameti. Ahankara vimudhatma. We're already intoxicated thinking that we're so important and, you know, whatever. So intoxication upon intoxication. We want to have a clear mind. The kind of craziness we want is a craziness of love. We don't want a craziness of poison. You know, we're not meant to poison these bodies and these minds, which are given to us as gifts by Krishna. And this, we're not even meant to poison our bodies and minds with bad association, asat sangat tyag. We're meant to keep our bodies and minds clear of toxins of all varieties, keep our body and mind and heart very healthy as fit offerings to Krishna. If we're filling our body and mind with chemical poisons or with the poison of evil association, and then how can we add Krishna? It'll be very difficult. We won't even notice Krishna. And no illicit sex. So also, Krishna told these imprisoned kings when he released them, he said, don't produce children out of lust. Produce children just with your married wife for good population. Prabhupada said in Tehran, we don't condemn the household or ashram. He said, it is needed. Otherwise, where will the saintly persons come from? He said, they will not fall from the sky. So sex should be used to produce saintly persons. That means it has to be used in marriage. It's very hard to raise good children if there's simply some boyfriend-girlfriend association. Children need mother and father by the arrangement of the Lord. And they need mother and father who are going to stick around, not that, you know, we produce children and, oh, now there's a better lady over here. Now there's a better man over here, or, you know, whatever. So these sinful actions have to be given up. Add Krishna, subtract sin. But Krishna, Prabhupada said, is not narrow or stereotype. Other than these sinful activities, you know, one can do anything and add Krishna. Whatever we can do in the world, we add Krishna. Then everything becomes beautiful. Prabhupada says that the devotee sees the world as happily situated. One doesn't, in fact, see one is in the material world. Prabhupada says in the 14th chapter of Krishna book that Maya exists only in the mind. When the Shastra, when Sadhu Shastra Guru talk about the world as a miserable place full of suffering, what they're talking about is the world as seen through the lens of illusion. Well, you can say, well, what is an objective fact? Bhutva, bhutva, pruliyate. Everything is going to be destroyed. There's birth, death, old age, and disease. But if one adds Krishna, one doesn't see it like that. One doesn't see those things as miserable. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying, Nadinam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Vajagadisha Kami Mama Janmani Janmani Shwari Bhavatad Bhakti Ohi Tiki Chaya. In Guru Vandana, we say, Janme Janme Prabhu say. Well, why? The devotees, they don't see that repeated birth is miserable. They don't care. They don't see it as miserable at all. The leper Vasudev, he had worms eating his flesh, and he didn't see that as miserable. If they fell down, he'd pick them up and put them back. When Haridas Thakur was being beaten in 23 marketplaces, he didn't see the suffering. He just said, oh, am I supposed to have died now? Are you going to get in trouble with your boss, with the government, because I haven't died yet? Okay, and he went into a yogic trance, and they threw him in the Ganga. He was just thinking, the people beating me, they're going to suffer. I'm giving some trouble to these people who are beating me. He didn't experience it as suffering. So when we say the material world is suffering, what we mean is Maya is suffering, illusion is suffering. When one doesn't have connection with Krishna, everything's vacant, everything's ugly. Nothing has any value. And when we acknowledge and work on the connection with Krishna that's already there, it's not artificially adding Krishna. What's artificial is not having Krishna. What's artificial is taking the germ out of the wheat. That's artificial. You just have it as it is. What's artificial is picking the fruit before it's ripe. That's artificial. So adding Krishna is natural. You just basically have to let things be what they are and not impose some veil of illusion on them. Remove the veil. To add Krishna means simply, really, what it really means is that you simply remove the illusion and you see that Krishna is already there. You don't have to artificially add Krishna. And then even if from an external point of view, our life has its times or its areas of difficulty, everybody will have times and or areas of difficulty on the external platform. But when we add Krishna, when we see Krishna's there, and we subtract sin, then our lives feel beautiful. They feel, as Krishna says, even the mode of goodness, all the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge. One's life feels full of joy and light and peace. So Kunti here is saying, Krishna, don't leave. If you leave, if your footprints or your shoe prints are on the ground, everything's beautiful. And as soon as they're not there, as soon as you're not walking around, then nothing has any more value. Everything is simply you. And Kunti wasn't interested in the gifts that Krishna gave them, the rulership of the earth and the wealth, power. She wasn't interested in that. She was interested in the giver. She was interested in Krishna. So questions, comments?
One of the words in this of the text is Gadadhar, O Krishna. I never heard. It's the first time that I realized that one of the names of Krishna is Gadadhar. What does it actually mean?
So Dada means one who holds up. Dada is also a name for the earth. Dada Dhanani. That means the earth because it holds everyone up. So like we say, Giri Dadi. Giri Dadi. Giri means mountain. Dadi means one who holds up. So that's a name for Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. And then Gada means a club. So Gada Dada, one who is holding the club. Sometimes this name is particularly used for Lord Balaram, who has a club and a plow. But of course, Krishna, one of the four symbolic representations in his four-handed form is this Gada, this club. His club is called Kamodakai. And it's Lord Kapiladeva says one should meditate on this club of the Lord being smeared with the blood of the demons to vanquish the demons. So there's all kinds of, I think about Varaha, that when Varaha was fighting with Hiranyaka with a club, so at one point his club slipped from his hand and was whirling down, and the demigods were so scared because Krishna's club was falling. Krishna killed, I think, Vidurata and Dantavakra with a club. So he used his club to smash them. He might have also thrown his club at Shalva's airplane. I'm not sure if I remember. But Dantavakra and Vidurata, Krishna killed with a club. I'm sure many of you can think of other demons that Krishna smashed with his huge club.
Okay, thank you.
I have two quick comments. I think mainly of appreciation. Of course, I like the class, as I always do, but I particularly liked your analogizing the world without Krishna with modern food. Quite a delicious analogy, I think. I really like that. I wrote it down. I'm going to steal it. Actually, I'm going to give you credit. And I also really liked your analysis of subsequent generations of devotees just adding Krishna to whatever they like and pointing out that that's one of the 64 angas of sadhana bhakti that's listed in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And it reminded, when you asked rhetorically, if anything can be engaged in Krishna's service, it reminded me of a remark that Srila Prabhupada made in a private meeting that a couple of devotees and I had with him at the end of 1973. One devotee wasn't married, and Prabhupada asked him what he was doing, and he said that he had a private pilot's license and he was working on getting an instructor's rating so that he could make a living teaching flying. And a lot of you might have expected that if other devotees had been in the room, they might have instructed him that he was just wasting his time, that he should move into the ashram, go out and sell books. Srila Prabhupada was completely unfazed. He looked at us and he said, devotees and devotional service cannot be stereotyped. There is nothing that cannot be engaged in Krishna's service. Simply, we require guidance from the expert spiritual master how to engage everything in Krishna's service. That's the only catch. And that was kind of seared in my heart when he said that. It was a wonderful moment, I thought. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
How does a butcher act Krishna?
Well, it's interesting, you know, how does the butcher add Krishna? So Narada Muni gave this instruction to Magrari. First thing he said to him was, just kill your animals completely. That was his first instruction. Then later, he said, throw away your bow. So it was interesting that there was he didn't immediately say to the butcher, to the hunter, throw away your bow, stop killing animals. It wasn't the first thing he said. The first thing he said is, if you're going to be killing animals, do it as compassionately as possible. that the animals are also part of God, that they're also your brothers, and you're going to be accountable for the pain that you give to others. So the first thing he did was try to add some compassion, add Krishna in the form of compassion. And it was interesting. He took a step-by-step process, just like Prabhupada would say, if you're going to drink wine, meditate on Krishna in your wine. And so I can see like that. And the Vedas also, that's exactly what the Vedas do. The Vedas say, okay, if you want to be a butcher, you can butcher these animals, but not these animals. And you can butcher them. I mean, practically every religious system has this. Every religious system has regulations for meat eating. You know, if you want to eat meat, you can eat this kind of meat, and you can eat it. You have to kill the animal in this way, and you can only, you know, you can't eat a lot of meat. You have to regulate when you can eat it, how you can eat it. So that's the beginning. You start having a connection between your meat eating and Shastra. You start eating meat according to the regulations of the Shastra, with the idea that you will give it up completely. But that's an interim step for the butcher. And Prabhupada would say to people, at least don't kill the cow. You know, or you offer the meat to the demigods, and offer the meat to Kali. So those are interim. And another way, which Prabhupada doesn't talk about in terms of animal killing, but he talks about, interestingly enough, in terms of murder. He says that the murderer is trying to experience the ghastly rasa. And that you can see in this enjoyment, I mean, a butcher who's actually killing the animals, that they're getting some pleasure from this ghastly rasa. But there's no... again, the essence is gone. The essence has been taken out. So there's not any real enjoyment from it. So Prabhupada said, if you really want to enjoy the ghastly rasa, you should meditate on Lord Nrisingadev. What's more ghastly than Lord Nrisingadev? You know, he pulls out Hiranyakashipu's heart and throws it across the room, and he himself is in the form of a partial animal. And then he pulls out the intestines. Now, what are these butchers doing? That's what they're doing. They're pulling out the animal's heart. They're pulling out the animal's intestines. And that's what they're doing. So let them at first do it by the regulations of the Shastra. If they won't, just give it up. I mean, best thing, you just tell them, just give it up. If they're not ready for that, okay, do it by the regulations of the Shastra. But if you really want happiness, meditate on Nrisingadev. Or you could meditate on Krishna's fight with Jarasandhar. You know, I've heard that in the slaughterhouses that the floors are wet with blood and that there's lots of accidents from people slipping in the blood. So in Krishna's fight with Jarasandhar, it's described that there are rivers of blood and that the body parts of the humans and the animals that they were engaging on the battlefield were floating in that river of blood. And they looked like, you know, turtles. The other day we were at the ocean, we saw a bunch of turtles. You know, they were looking like turtles and all sorts of little islands. So if you want to enjoy this ghastly rasa, then you can do it that way instead of killing the poor animals.
Very nice answer. Thank you.
Yeah, great answer. Great class. Dandavat Sarma, Didi. It was when McGrari accepted what Narada had said about having to suffer reactions for his cruelty to animals life after life. When that hit him, he surrendered, and then he wanted to have Narada give him a way out of his reactions. And that's when Narada said, okay, break the bow. That's the first thing. So yeah, that was a great answer. I like that. There's a gradation of instructions according to what people, you know, where they're at. And but I took a few notes, and I wanted to share them. In this verse, we hear Queen Kunti reveal that it is Krishna and the impression of his footprints that are making the kingdom beautiful. And without him, this transcendental beauty is gone. And as you pointed out, if we add Krishna to our lives, our lives become beautiful. So, of course, Krishna is so beautiful that he attracts everyone, and that's the meaning of his name. He's the attractor of millions of Cupids, and for that, he is known as Madan Mohan. But we also hear that Radharani can attract even Krishna, and therefore, she is the attractor of the attractor of Cupid, and for that, she is called Madan Mohan Mohini. And when I was thinking about this, I was thinking how beautiful Lord Gauranga must have been as the combination of Radha and Krishna. And simply by seeing him, people would get love of Godhead. And what I was looking for when you were giving your talk was something that I saw that struck me years ago. It's in Krishna book. And it goes like this, is Prabhupada in Krishna book. When Lord Krishna finally reappeared and assembled with the gopis, he looked very beautiful, just befitting a person with all kinds of opulences. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Prati Bhavitabhi. Krishna alone is not particularly beautiful, but when his energy, especially his pleasure energy, represented by Radharani, expands, he looks very magnificent. And sometimes we see in the marketplace posters of Krishna depicted alone, and sometimes even put an om in the background. And so this is the continuation of what I was just reading in Krishna book. The Mayavad conception of the perfection of the absolute truth without potency is due to insufficient knowledge. Actually, outside the exhibition of his different potencies, the absolute truth is not complete. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa means that his body is a transcendental form of eternal bliss and knowledge. Krishna is always surrounded by different potencies, and therefore he is perfect and beautiful. We understand from Brahma Samhita and the Skanda Purana that Krishna is always surrounded by many thousands of goddesses of fortune. The gopis are all goddesses of fortune, and Krishna took them hand in hand on the bank of the Jamuna. So I just thought I'd add that.
Thank you.
Marmala Prabhu, my question is, I know somebody that is a Prabhupada disciple, and somewhere along the line, she has decided that she doesn't get enough protein through vegetarian sources, and she started eating meat. And she also engages in detoxication. But she likes Srila Prabhupada, she likes Krishna, she's attracted to Krishna, and she still considers herself to be a devotee. And so my question is she? Or is she a devotee and just very deluded over, and maybe someday she'll give this up, or is she not really a devotee and just...
I would not even begin to pretend to take an individual living entity and pass judgment on their particular level, especially if I don't know them. That would require a great amount of hubris even for me. And I don't think that's appropriate. I mean, there's at least one place where Prabhupada talked about people who gave up Krishna consciousness and said, as long as they're not eating meat, they're still a devotee. And there's one purport where Prabhupada said that anyone who has the practice, anyone who has the regular practice of offering their food to Krishna is a devotee. But when we say devotee, you know, there's such a range of someone who's a devotee. We have Lord Kapila Dev talks about devotees in the mode of ignorance, performing bhakti yoga in the mode of ignorance, performing bhakti yoga in the mode of passion, performing bhakti yoga in the mode of goodness, and so forth. I mean, what to speak of somebody who's has some affection for Krishna. What about those people who are following Jesus or Mohammed, but who are regularly eating meat? You know, they have something. I mean, Prabhupada would say that the Christians are praying. That's very nice. Then he'd say, but why aren't they obedient? So if someone says, I love Prabhupada, but they're not obedient to one of Srila Prabhupada's, you know, most emphatic and core instructions, then how much do you really love them? You know, maybe something, but it's probably to some extent sentimental, but something. I mean, it's something. You can't... Prabhupada was in Hawaii, and the devotees were asking Prabhupada, what about people who say you don't have to follow the regulative principles, you just have to chant Hare Krishna? And Prabhupada said, what is the meaning of the 10 kinds of offenses? And he particularly talked about sinning on the strength of chanting. So this depends on the person. If we think about someone like a Jamil, who was engaged in sin while he was chanting Narayana, Narayana, but he wasn't intentionally sinning on the strength of chanting. Like Prabhupada talks about the alcoholic who's trying to see Krishna in the taste of his wine. That person's making progress going up, and they're not intentionally sinning on the strength of chanting. But Prabhupada said, sinning on the strength of chanting, he said, maybe in 700 lifetimes you'll become perfect. And the devotee said, well, Prabhupada, should they just give up chanting if they're offensive? He said, no. He said, but it will take a long time. So, you know, I don't know the mentality of this particular person. I can't talk about a particular individual. But on principle, if someone thinks that as long as I have some affection for Prabhupada and Krishna, that will nullify my sinful reactions, then that's an offense which will greatly retard the development of spirituality. But the positive is still there. Krishna takes the positive from someone who says Sinarama, from some Muslim who gets gored by a pig and says Haram, Haram, which means condemned, condemned. So that's, Krishna's like that. You know, Krishna took the good from Putana. Upon meditating on that, Pundarik Vijayanidhi went into ecstasy. Krishna took the good from Putana, who tried to kill him. That doesn't mean that we should say, okay, Krishna took the good from Putana, you know, let me intentionally do sinful and demoniac things and mix it with Krishna, and you know, it depends. It depends on one's mentality. So, generally speaking, you have to say, is someone going up or coming down? So it's very different. If somebody goes from eating cows to just eating chicken, that's a step up. And then if they stop eating chicken but they're still eating fish, that's a step up. Then if they become fully vegetarian, that's a step up. You know, it's interesting, Prabhupada would often say, we're not preaching to people to be vegetarians. But there's a lot of time he was preaching to people to be vegetarian. There's time he would meet with non-devotees and just say, stop eating meat. He wouldn't talk about prasadam. Or just stop eating the cows. And he has many purports where he just says, don't eat meat. He's not even talking about prasadam. So it depends to who you're talking about. But if someone's already eating prasadam and then they just become a vegetarian without offering their food, that's a step down. You know, and are you committing sin innocently? Or are you committing sin maliciously and offensively? You know, are you wicked or are you just weak? You know, what is the situation? But even a Jamil who went down, who had been a very Pukka Brahmin and went down to a very low level, still whatever service he did in that down condition was still counted. But again, if you say, oh, I'll take advantage of that, I'll take advantage of Krishna's leniency, then everything is retarded. So it's a little tricky. And all you can really talk about is principles. You know, when it comes to how do you apply those principles to a live, breathing individual in front of you, then it's an individual case. One person is going to be making very slow progress because they're an offender. I mean, in Vrindavan, there were out-and-out demons who dressed up as devotees. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that some people wearing tilak and neck beads are Kali Chela. They're disciples of Kali. They're demons and dress of devotee. Prabhupada has a purport like that. He He says even in the Krishna consciousness movement, there are demons dressed as devotees. We had this experience in Vrindavan. There was one teacher in the school there who was sexually molesting the boys. When he was caught, he said, "I'm actually an atheist, and I've come here to Vrindavan to do this just to prove that there's no God." So, you know, who's a devotee and who's a demon is, you know, we have symptoms for the highest level. We have symptoms for bhava and things like that. But when we're dealing with people who are still in the modes of nature and who are aspiring devotees, where are you going to draw your, at what level do you draw your line? You know, Yamaraj tells the Yamadutas, if someone just one time sincerely bows down to the Lord, you don't touch that person. Right? And Lord Nisingadev said, if one time a person surrenders to me, from that time on they become my personal ward. So definitely there are a lot of people who are still struggling with sinful activities, but they're actually devotees. And then there are people who apparently are very religious persons in their external following, but they're hypocrites and they're demons. So I don't think you can give an absolute formula that you can just sort of apply to a particular person. But, you know, I'm sorry if that doesn't really answer your question for that person.
It does help, because there's a tendency for those who are following to be judgmental, especially, you know, when it comes to, I think, like a real sinful activity among all the four regular principles. It's ghastly, and it's harming animals and supporting that. And I don't think many devotees, initiated devotees, they may engage in some other breaking the principles like intoxication or illicit sex, but the engaging in meat eating is pretty rare for those that stop following it. So this helps me a lot. You know, whether, you know, to not be so judgmental, because, you know, this person does like Srila Prabhupada, and she says she loves Srila Prabhupada, and she's attracted to Krishna, and, who knows, you know, who knows what's up in the future, or, you know, is she going to change, or the next lifetime start all over, and so, because at one time or another, she was surrendered to all of Srila Prabhupada's instructions and living in a temple and engaging in devotional service. So this does help a lot, I feel, because I have been judgmental with her. And so thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, we have to be discriminating, which is a kind of judging, in terms of our association. So therefore is advised, asat sangatiyag, a Vaishnavachara. So Prabhupada says the two kinds of asat that we're supposed to give up is, one asat is just grossly materialistic persons, you know, mayavadis, and the other asat is devotees who are engaging in sense gratification, low-level devotees. So we're supposed to give up both of those kinds of association. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada generally, and the Acharyas generally, when they define the low-level devotees engaging in sense gratification, they're usually talking about illicit sex. And they're usually talking about, say, sahajiyas who, you know, they chant Hare Krishna and then they have so many illicit relationships and in the name of Krishna consciousness. So we are meant to be judgmental in terms of our association. That we must be. We shouldn't just indiscriminately, intimately associate with anyone. And we can also tell people the straight sauce. You know, depending on our relationship with them. Depending on our relationship with them. It's an offense to preach above a person's willingness to hear. So that's one of the offenses on chanting. It's really just coming from pride. If I preach to you above your ability and your willingness to hear. But we should tell people the truth if they're willing to hear. You know, that, okay, you love Prabhupada, but you're not following his instructions. That's what Prabhupada would say to the Christians.
you love Jesus. That's wonderful you love Jesus. We don't want to take away that you love Jesus. We're not going to tell you you don't have any love for Jesus, but we're saying if you love him, do what he says. You know, this should be ABC. But even in our normal relationships, we often don't do that. You know, even in our ordinary family and friends and working relationships, we often try to impose our will on other people rather than respecting what they want. So, you know, yes, my dear wife, I love you, but we get her something for her birthday that we want, not that she wants. You know, this is very, very common. I love you, but I want to show my love for you in ways that please me rather than showing my love for you in ways that please you. So this is a common disease. But, I mean, basically what you want to do with people is fan the spark. Fan the spark. Fan the spark. You know, add Krishna, add Krishna, add Krishna. At a certain point of adding Krishna, they will willingly subtract sin. You can tell them from the beginning to subtract the sin. And some people will do it immediately. Some people, you say, add Krishna and subtract the sin now. And they'll immediately do it. And then they'll do it for the rest of their lives. You tell them one time, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling. Poof. They follow and they never do it again. You know, I'm sure there's people you say one time, these are the 10 offenses on chanting, don't do them. And then they never do them again. You know, but for most people, it doesn't work like that. For most people, it's as they gradually and proportionally, Prabhupada says, as they add Krishna, we're willing to subtract more and more sin. And then there's all the subtle forms of sin. As Krishna says, he for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone. You know, so we may hear that. We read the Bhagavad Gita and hear, he for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone. Okay, I'm not going to put anyone into difficulty. I'm not going to eat meat. I'm not going to put the animals into difficulty. But maybe I'll put the other brahmacharis into difficulty. Maybe I'll put my husband into difficulty. So we can't say, well, you have to immediately follow this instruction. Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, purport 331, those who have faith in the Lord but cannot immediately... Let's read it, because I'm actually going to find it, because it's such a poignant... Gita 3... So Prabhupada says, an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of karma. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So this purport to 331, I think, should be our guiding principle with anybody who has trouble following anything, big rule, small rule, and should be our guiding principle with ourselves. If we find that we have trouble with doing something, don't resent the principle. Accept the principle. Don't say, oh, the principle's wrong. You know, don't say, oh, those people who go to Mangalarti, they're just fanatics. Or those people who are strict in their sex life, they're just repressed. Don't resent the principle. Accept the principle. And then work sincerely. You know, we could talk about what is sincerity, but not right now. Work sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness. Not feeling, oh, it's hopeless. I'm never going to make it. Without that depression, without defeat, without hopelessness. Keep the principle. Right? And have firm faith. These are the right principles. And then eventually one will come to perfection. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.